Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That's schmaltzy. You've heard the phrase, and when you have, you've probably thought of something corny, or maybe if you know something about Jewish cuisine, something fatty. When award-winning cookbook author Michael Ruhlman thinks of schmaltz, he thinks of something delicious. He has devoted his most recent cookbook to the topic of schmaltz. The title? The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. He joins us today from his home near Cleveland. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Happy to be here.
In the subtitle, you call it the forgotten fat. Tell us where schmaltz comes from and its role in Jewish cuisine.
It comes from the Ashkenazi Jewish tradition. Those Jews throughout the middle band of Europe, where olive oil wasn't grown in the main cooking fat before we started producing industrial vegetable oil, was pig fat, which was forbidden. And so they used the rendered fat from chickens and geese to use as their main cooking fat. And so that's where its origins are. Its origins are in necessity and need. And as we've grown as a country and as our food has changed and evolved, fat got pushed, schmaltz got pushed aside because, one, it was inconvenient. You had to work to get it. And two, fat was considered to be bad for you. And so it was much maligned. And I think that is wrong. It's a fabulous and wonderful fat. I sensed this. And when I heard my neighbor, Lois Barron, say she had to leave a party early because the high holidays were upon us and she had to go make schmaltz, I knew it was time to explore this fat that I knew about but didn't really know anything about and wanted to learn.
And when I read your new book, The Book of Schmaltz, it still didn't prepare me for the length of time that I had to devote to make one cup of schmaltz. It was significant.
Well, you don't have to stand there the whole time.
No, but I was worried I was going to burn it.
Yeah, that's true, and you can, and you don't want to burn it. You can overcook schmaltz, and it takes on a sort of an overly roasted flavor, which you don't want. But I would definitely recommend making it in bigger batches than just a cup, because it freezes great. So I would save up lots of chicken skin, or what I've often done is gone to our local farmer's market. I know you've got great markets in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And ask them to save fat, because a lot of these farmers will pull the fat off the breast because people want boneless, skinless chicken breasts, and they have all this leftover fat. So ask a farmer for a couple of pounds of chicken fat and skin to render down.
When I posted on Facebook that I made the schmaltz last weekend, a lot of people responded, and the people who responded saying, "Oh, you're going to have a heart attack. It's going to clog your arteries." They were all people I know are Jewish. There's a guilt associated with schmaltz.
Drives me absolutely bananas. Yes.
And you're not Jewish, so.
And I'm not even Jewish, but yeah, everyone says that, and it drives me crazy. I mean, yes, too much fat is bad for you. If all you ate was lettuce, you'd get really sick as well. We're misguided in our sort of knee-jerk, fat is evil, fat is bad response. And the media does this, and recipes do this. Fat in itself is not bad for us. Too much fat is bad for us. Fat doesn't make us fat. Eating too much makes us fat. Yes, we do know that some people, fat can raise our blood serum cholesterol, but I eat all the schmaltz and bacon and red meat that I want, and my doctor says he'll never put me on cholesterol medicine. So again, I think the message should be quality fat, not no fat. Small quantities of delicious fat are great. Eat a well-balanced diet. Eat food you cook yourself. The best diet I know of is the cook-your-own-food diet. Then you can eat pretty much anything. So that's my stance on that. And again, it's media-driven, this fear of fat. This mm-hmm. is, yes, I hear it too. Oh, it's heart attack food. Lois is 77 and cooking like a banshee. Her husband, Russell, has been eating schmaltz, is 81 and still works as a lawyer. Their son is rail thin. So it just doesn't stand up.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with award-winning cookbook author Michael Ruhlman. His new book is called The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. If you have a favorite recipe that uses schmaltz, give us a call and share it, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You first wrote this. I thought this was really interesting. You first wrote this book as an ebook. You didn't think there would be that much interest or what?
Well, a couple of things were happening. First, I'm curious about the new digital media and what that allows the people who make the content, who write the books, what new muscles it gives to us. And second, I didn't want to go out and try and convince a publisher or write a proposal about an obscure fat in a fat-phobic country. And my wife, Donna, really pushed us to say, Michael, let's just do this on our own. We don't need a publisher. Let's just do it. And so we did. She took the photographs. I'm lucky to be married to a wonderful photographer.
You're beautiful.
Thank you. And so she really pushed to do this ourselves. And we did it. We hired a designer. We hired a digital person here in Cleveland, a designer here in Cleveland. I found a wonderful copy editor in Boston. And the whole team of us put together this book. And then when we showed my publisher, Little Brown, the PDF, they said, wow, we love this. Can we publish this as well? And I said, you bet. And so we published ourselves to iTunes as an iPad app, and Little Brown's publishing the hardcover.
You dedicated the book to Lois Barron. You mentioned your neighbor. She said that schmaltz is like a thread that runs through a great tapestry. She said that it's a secret handshake among Jews who love to cook and eat. And I loved that, how she put that.
She's a wonderful lady. She's very articulate. She's a Shakespeare scholar who failed to get her PhD owing to three kids that she needed to raise. But she's hilarious. And wonderful. There's actually a video of her talking about schmaltz and its importance on my site, Ruhlman.com. She's a lovely lady, and she's very, very helpful. And she was my tester. I had to bring over the chopped liver and say, does this meet your standard? And it did. I brought over my first knishes, and she said, Michael, the dough is too thick. You've got to make it thinner. And so I said, help me out. So she came over to my kitchen, and And as the book shows, Donna took pictures of us rolling out knish dough in my kitchen. And so that's how the book came about. And it wouldn't have happened without Lois.
This was a lot of stuff you'd never made yourself before.
I hadn't made any of this stuff before. I didn't even know what schmaltz was. I said, Lois, how do you make schmaltz? And she said, render chicken fat with onion. And I knew what to do then. I knew what that was. And I tasted hers and I tasted mine and it was identical. And she said, yep, that's good schmaltz. And I took it from there. I did traditional recipes because I love cooking traditions. And then I said, why not use schmaltz in contemporary versions, like make a traditional French pot of choux dough using schmaltz instead of butter to make Parisian gnocchi. And I'm very proud of that. To make brioche, it makes a beautiful savory brioche. So there's all kinds of ways beyond the Jewish culinary tradition for using this remarkable and flavorful fat.
Some of the folks on Facebook said, yum, you know, on pumpernickel with salt.
Oh, it is fabulous. I think that's probably the best way to appreciate the schmaltz is to put it on some form of bread, whether it's rye or even whole wheat, but rye is my favorite. Pumpernickel is such a strong flavor. Well, I'd give that a go. But yes, some coarse salt, a nice slather of schmaltz on toasted rye or toasted pumpernickel is heaven, and so simple.
What kind of feedback have you been getting from people about the book?
Nothing but good feedback. In fact, two of the nation's great writers on Jewish cuisine, both Jews, Joan Nathan and Arthur Schwartz, whose books I used to also guide me in as main references. Arthur said, you know, I could almost hear him slapping his forehead saying, why didn't I think of that? and so it's been received well. And I am not Jewish. I am 100% goy, as far as I know. And I think it's because I come from outside the tradition that I realized that this was something special and unique and deserved to be raised up and held in the light and explored.
When I made my schmaltz last weekend, it looked like lemon pudding. Is that the way it's supposed to look? It was pretty.
When it's liquid at warm or at room temperature, it's got a beautiful golden color. Mm-hmm. When it's cold, it sets up as a lovely yellow. Yes, pudding like fat. It's softer. You know, I think it's softer than butter, and therefore must be lower in saturated fat. So it's probably more healthy to eat than butter. And so I would certainly encourage using that. But most of all, you make it because, one, it's delicious, and two, you're using all of the chicken.
Right.
We're not throwing this fat away. Roast potatoes in it. They are just absolutely miraculous. Somehow the animal fat, the chicken fat, makes it very, very crunchy on the outside, fluffy and moist on the inside, and deeply flavored with that onion, chickeny, roasted flavor. Oh, I get hungry thinking.
I know, so do I. You know, I spent whatever I had left over from not using it in the recipe. I tossed with some shallots and spinach for the rest of the week. You know,
perfect.
So it was wonderful, and I did indeed have some on some bread. It's not just rendered chicken fat. There's a way to make it. One of the things is I definitely took to heart the suggestion to freeze the chicken skin and the fat that I took off the thighs and then chop it up. That's the only way to do it. But I had a hard time getting, what do you call it, the skin when it gets all crumbly and...
Grivenas.
I had a hard time getting the grivenas right. They were kind of, they never got really brown and crunchy. I was still afraid I was going to burn the schmaltz.
You didn't cook them long enough. What happens is that those grivenas are basically connective tissue.
Yeah.
That's why they're so hard to cut through when they're raw, and why when you freeze it, it makes it easier to slice through. You probably didn't cut them fine enough. They need to render out the water so that you're and the fat, so that you're left with, they're basically little, well, I refer to them as protein snacks. Because that's what they are. It's connective tissue. It's all protein, nice browned, crispy protein, because all the fat and water has been cooked out of it, if you cook it long enough. And I've done that, too, where I will admit to doing that, too, that I didn't take them long enough, and so they were still a little chewy rather than crispy.
Yeah.
But they're still delicious. I still hope they taste good.
Yes, I managed to eat them. I very well did. My guest is Michael Ruhlman. He is an award, James Beard Award-winning author for his Ruhlman's 20. That's the last time he was on the show, was to talk about that book. Today, he's on to talk about his new book, The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. If you use schmaltz, if you have a memory of eating schmaltz, if you would like to ask Michael Ruhlman a cooking question, you're welcome. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest this hour, Michael Ruhlman, home cook, entrepreneur, and author of The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. If you have a question or comment for Michael, you're welcome to join the show, join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Seth in Columbus, you're on the air with Michael Ruhlman. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. My name is Seth. I'm with Cat Fingers Deli here in Columbus. I was just calling to say how great this cookbook must be. I haven't seen it yet, but at Cat Fingers, we've been using schmaltz and our matzo balls and chopped liver for years, and it's definitely a great product to use in this.
Now, Seth, how does your deli make schmaltz?
Well, from one of our purveyors, we get in just a case of chicken fat that they saved for us. And we just put it on a large pot and just simmer it for until, you know, as much of the moisture is out as we can get out.
Do you have gribbins in there?
I'm sorry?
Do you have the chicken cracklings in there?
Yeah, it's just a lot of all the cracklings. We don't reserve those usually. We just compost them.
Oh, well, I would definitely put those to use. Do not compost those. They're too good for bugs.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check out this cookbook and see what kinds of other good stuff we can do with it.
I would recommend adding some onion to the schmaltz that you're doing. Often the big companies making big batch schmaltz don't put nearly enough onion. The onion gives it a depth of flavor and sweetness that you can't get any other way. So I'd give, try browning some onion in a big pot of schmaltz gently and see how you like it.
That's kind of the process we do with the chopped liver.
Oh, you do? Good. Well, for you. Keep making that chopped liver.
Okay. Will do.
All right, Seth from Katzinger's Deli. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Anybody else out there? 614-292-8513. So what Seth mentioned, matzo balls, what other sorts of, you can use schmaltz in anything that you want to use. You want to, you know, use butter for almost, except that it doesn't set up quite the same way butter does. So what can you use schmaltz in? What's the world of schmaltz?
There's really nothing you can't make with schmaltz. I even made a pork-free chicken sausage, and it works great. You have to make sure the fat is very, very cold when you paddle it into the ground chicken and seasonings, but it makes a fabulous sausage. So those Jews who need to keep kosher but love sausage can make a fabulous chicken sausage using schmaltz and chicken.
What about pie crusts and stuff like that?
Pie crusts would be great. I mean, lard was a traditional fat for pie crusts, but schmaltz would be fabulous in that. In fact, you can make a schmaltz pie crust and then do a chicken pot pie in that, and it would be a cereal. It would be great. It makes wonderful pastries. It makes a wonderful brioche. Now, that is not kosher. It's got some dairy in it, so it would not be kosher, but it nevertheless makes a savory, wonderful brioche with a tender, tender crumb and a really delicious crust. So there's no end to what you can do.
Beth in Columbus, you're on the air with Michael Ruhlman. Welcome, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to share two small stories. One is my grandmother my mother's mother was a horrible cook. She just would take the kosher meat and then salt it one more time, just to make sure that all the blood had come out. But I do remember that she kept schmaltz, or her mother kept schmaltz. Her mother used to make gefilte fish the old-fashioned way. And the other story that I wanted to share was that a friend of mine went to Hungary. This was in the 80s, to visit distant relatives, and all they had to eat every day for breakfast was schmaltz on black bread, and she wasn't Jewish, and she hated every moment of it. So you either like it or you don't, and I miss that's the tradition that I want to keep, and I constantly fight with my father to give me the carcass and the turkey so I can make good home stock. So anyway,
you have to fight with him because he wants to make it, or he wants to throw it away?
No, he just wants to throw it away, and I'm like, give it to me, you know. Give it to me before it goes bad. It is. It's terrible. It's Shonda.
Well, there's a good fight to have on Thanksgiving with the family.
Yeah.
Well, you know, for the first time in ever, I think, Hanukkah, the first day of Hanukkah, falls on Thanksgiving.
Isn't that weird? That's so weird. Yeah.
Lucky and good.
Yeah. A latke and some turkey.
Right.
All right. See you
All
later.
Right. Take care, Beth. Thanks for your call. Speaking of turkey, Ruth in Columbus, welcome to the show. You're on with Michael Ruhlman.
Hi. I'm not at all Jewish. We're from rural Ohio, but we used to pop corn in chicken fat.
Oh, yum.
No.
I have not done that. That sounds fabulous.
It's really good. I remember it from my childhood. The other question I had was, what about turkey, goose, or duck fat? Is that at all comparable?
Absolutely. It counts as schmaltz. Any poultry fat works. The reason why we don't use turkey skin and fat for schmaltz is because turkey is a Native American bird, and so the Eastern European Jews didn't have access to turkeys. Turkeys didn't grow
sense.
Over there.
Yeah.
And so it was never part of the schmaltz tradition. Geese, of course, were, and so it was mainly geese and chicken fat. But there's every reason that Americans can make great turkey schmaltz. In fact, make it to make a roux for your Thanksgiving gravy, and you've got a really deep, rich turkey flavor for your gravy.
Thank you. We're never considering it schmaltz. This is really fun.
Yeah, it's how I recommend making gravy. Either while the turkey is roasting and releasing its fat, or before the turkey has roasted, you can cut off some of the skin and take some of the fat and render it, and use that add some flour to it and cook the roux, and then whisk the cold roux into a hot turkey stock, and you've got a beautiful, clean, delicious gravy for your turkey.
Oh, sounds good.
Oh,
thank you.
Me too.
Well, enjoy popcorn.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Micah in Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Welcome, Micah.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You had mentioned a few minutes ago that the mass-produced schmaltz companies, they often don't add enough onion. So I was surprised, first of all, that it is being mass-produced. But with that in mind, are there any brands that do use enough onions? I'm not really hearing Ann's saga about making it a couple weekends ago. I'm not as interested in making it as I am in using it and trying it.
Oh, it was fun.
Along with that, I'm curious, are there any organic schmaltzes out there?
Okay,
that's a good question. I don't know. I know that my publisher has sourced some mail-order schmaltz. I'm sure just by Googling it, you can find many sources. Also, I know here in Cleveland, Jewish butchers, Jewish jellies do carry, big deli containers of it. And what I would do then is, I mean, Lois, my schmaltz guru, does not believe that it's schmaltz unless you make it at home with the onion and the skin. You need the gribbenas, the browning of the gribbenas. You need the browning of the onion. But what I would do is I'd buy some schmaltz from a deli or order it, find out, I'm sure there's somebody making organic. And I would then cook onion in it and then strain out the onion once the onion has browned. And then you will have as close as possible to true from scratch schmaltz.
Thanks, Micah, for that call.
You have to refrigerate it?
Pardon me?
How do you store it? Do you have to refrigerate it?
Oh.
That's a good question. It is relatively volatile and will start losing its unique flavors after about a week in the refrigerator. It should be refrigerated. It can be stored indefinitely in the freezer. I wouldn't freeze it for more than, say, 6 months, just because you start to pick up some flavors. But if you do it, Lois and I store the schmaltz in glass ball jars. And it stores great, so you can always have some schmaltz on hand. So if you're not going to use it within a week, freeze it.
Thank you, Micah, for that call. You know, I didn't mean to make it sound like a saga. I don't think I'll ever churn butter, but I can make schmaltz now. And
I think you should, in fact, churn butter because it's so easy. Really, people who whip cream,
whipped
cream. Yeah, if you take it, just put it in your food processor or your KitchenAid mixer and whip it until the water separates out and you have butter, and then you knead all the water out and you've got your own homemade butter. It's actually very easy. It's also a great way to preserve cream. I was staying with Jacques Pepin at his home in Connecticut once, and they were going on a long trip and his wife, Gloria, had gotten some really delicious cream from a neighbor and didn't want to lose it, so she quickly popped it into a food processor, processed it till the fat and the liquid separated, and she had some butter that she could then freeze and make use of this delicious cream.
Okay.
to save. So again, that's not hard. I think schmaltz is harder.
And oh, yes.
Again, we shouldn't make it sound easy. I mean, Lois makes a good point that, you know, it does take time. It does take effort. So you're one of a special band of people if you are making schmaltz. It's part of the secret handshake that you feel that it is worth the trouble.
Yes.
to render down fat and use it in your cooking.
Yes, and it is. It was fabulous. Hang on. Ossie and Marion, you're on the air with Michael Ruhlman. Welcome, Ossie.
Good morning. I remember growing up in Germany, and my mom gave us a slice of bread with some schmaltz on it. We put a little bit of salt on it. I never heard of chicken fat. Ours always was lard from pigs, but it was excellent.
It is. Schmaltz in German means fat, correct?
Schmaltz.
Ossie?
Yes.
Schmaltz in German is the word for fat, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Correct.
And yes, of course you could do that, but Jews could not use the pig fat, and so they used the chicken fat instead. And I think it's schmaltz is much more flavorful than lard. Lard is a more neutral fat with less flavor. Schmaltz has a really deep flavor. I would describe it as roasted plus browning plus onion is really plus chicken. So chicken plus browning plus onion is really what you get when you cook schmaltz.
It was so light tasting though too.
It's not heavy at all.
No.
Again, it's lighter than butter.
Yeah.
I agree.
Ossie, thank you for that call. If anyone else would like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm talking with Michael Ruhlman. We're talking about his new book, The Book of Schmaltz. We have an email from Matthew in Columbus. He says, a while ago, I picked up some duck fat from one of the meat shops in the North Market and have used it to cook French fries, which is delicious. Is schmaltz similar to that? Does your guest have any favorite places in Columbus to purchase schmaltz? And by the way, Matthew, it's spelled S-C-H-M-A-L-T-Z. You are close. So, is schmaltz, I mean, when you're just using fat from a duck, is that the same thing, Michael?
Well, sure, it is. Again, schmaltz means fat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get that duck fat and you treat it just as you do the chicken fat, cooking it with onions once the fat has rendered, you will have schmaltz that is every bit as delicious and as traditional as chicken fat. You can do the same with geese. Geese, an underused bird in America home kitchens, has abundant quantities of fat. I would highly recommend making goose fat schmaltz or schmaltz from goose skin and fat because it's got so much of it. Especially as these holidays come around, it's a great dish to have. So what I would recommend is going to any of the farmers around Columbus. I know there are many of them, and just call them ahead of time and order a pound or two of chicken skin and fat. I'm sure they'd be happy to save it for you. I'll bet half of it gets thrown away, which is a crime. So get people, pretty soon you're not going to be able to get the fat because people are going to be wanting it, I'm guessing. That's the best way to get it, though, is to get it from a local farmer who's growing his or her own chickens, mm-hmm. geese, and duck.
When you're talking about the goose, I remember when I've made them before, part of the recipe is just rendering the fat out of them so that they're not really greasy when you eat them. But now I'm thinking about all that fat that I got rid of, and it's making me feel really badly right now because I just threw it all away.
You're right, and you don't need to. It's so economical.
Mm-hmm.
Save all your fat. Just keep it in the fridge. And instead of reaching for that olive oil or that butter or that vegetable oil,
mm-hmm.
use this really flavorful fat. instead of throwing it down your drain. Ugh. It's even bad for your drain.
Exactly. There's nothing good about throwing it away. Bill in Cincy, you're on the air with Michael Ruhlman. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill Bender.
I'm sorry, from Cincinnati. They wrote down Cincy. I shouldn't have said it that way. Sorry about that.
Good morning. Yes, Bill Bender from Cincinnati, and I'm glad I'm driving through Central Ohio today. This has been a fabulous show. Mr. Ruhlman, do you have any relations in Cincinnati by chance?
Not that I'm aware of.
But very well-respected family in Cincinnati, the Ruhlmans. Anyway, when Anne was mentioning earlier, she thought it had a consistency look of lemon pudding that brought a smile to my eyes as I was driving behind the wheel, because in the 50s, I was in a neighbor's home, looked in the refrigerator, being cautious, saw this delicious-looking lemony, what I thought was pudding. I put my finger in it and put it to my mouth, and when the matron of the kitchen saw my face, she laughed and roared, and she said, I gotcha. But my question for Mr. Ruhlman is, are all of the things you're discussing today on air in the book? I want to order the book, and I'm wondering, what's the contents of the book? And I'll take the
content
off the air.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
The contents of the book are an essay on schmaltz by me, and an interview with Lois about the importance of schmaltz in history. And then I do 10 recipes that are traditional recipes from the Jewish tradition: matzo ball soup, chopped liver, kishki, kreplach, which are fabulous. They're Jewish pot stickers, dumplings that are fried in schmaltz. They're absolutely fabulous. But I also do 10 recipes that use schmaltz in contemporary ways, like making Parisian gnocchi, making oatmeal cookies with schmaltz or brioche, because it's not a fat that needs to be relegated to Jewish cooking. So it's a short book, short subject book, with 20 recipes and also 3 different strategies for making chicken stock, because I think chicken stock is so important to just have on hand and makes all your cooking delicious.
And lots of beautiful, beautiful photographs by Donna Turner Ruhlman, Steve's
by
or Michael's
my wife.
Yeah, they're beautiful. We're going to take a quick break, then we'll get back to our conversation with Michael Ruhlman. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about schmaltz today and Michael's new book, The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Michael Ruhlman. We're talking about his new cookbook, The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. I have an email from Bridget. She says, I grew up in Germany and my mother often made schmaltz from pig fat. At Christmas, we had a goose, and schmaltz made from goose fat was especially tasty. It is softer than schmaltz from pig fat. We ate it on sourdough rye bread with salt. I come from a large family, and having a pot of schmaltz in the kitchen helped to feed us and our friends. You actually still can buy schmaltz in Germany. Thank you for bringing back memories.
That's really lovely to hear, and I'm so glad for that. So many people have come to me and told me of their memories of schmaltz and their bubbas and how it brings them back to a time that they remember so fondly. And that's one of the important things that food does, especially through smell. Our smell sensors are located in our limbic system, which are our primitive brain, and quickly return us more than any other sense to our long ago past. And this is what schmaltz can do. This is what other foods can do. And it's one of the important impacts of food is to, it makes our life better by bringing back these good memories. We usually have good memories associated with food, few bad memories, unless you had a terrible cook for a mom, as some people do, like Ruth Reichel. Her mom was a famously awful cook. So people are unlucky that way. But again, most people tell me about how
how it brings them back to their childhood and to the memories of people that they've loved and lost. And it's an important part of our humanity to do that. And schmaltz is one of the ways that makes that happen. And we can't forget that more cerebral side of food and cooking.
Joy in Columbus, you're on the air with Michael Ruhlman. Welcome, Joy.
Hi. Thank you so much, Ann. Michael, and thank you for this. I've never in my life even heard of schmaltz, so this is an exciting thing for me. Two questions. Michael, can you combine chicken, goose, and duck to create this schmaltz? And my second question is, when you were talking about pies, I was thinking about making holiday pies crust with this, and I'm wondering if I should make a batch without the onion to do that.
Oh, good question.
And if you'll give me a second, I'm going to get off the air. I'm on the road, and I'd like to take the answer online, you know, on my radio.
All right, Joy, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
The first question was, can you combine the fats? Well, Joy, you can do whatever you want because it's your damn kitchen, so do what you want. I think people are too reliant on recipes and are too afraid to go outside the box. I think it's a fabulous idea to combine the fats. Absolutely. Make use of them all. I would, in terms of making pie crust, again, think about it. You know, how is the pie crust going to be used? If it's a savory pie, I would leave the onion in. If it's going to be a sweet pie, I would leave the onion out. That's a good thought and a good question. So, yes, leave the onion out. Assume you're making a sweeter pie, which is why you asked. But then again, remember that onions are sweet, mm-hmm. and we do like a little bit of savory to counteract the very sweet pie. So, it could go either way, but I appreciate your intelligence in thinking, maybe I should leave the schmaltz out. I would try that if you're making a sweet pie like an apple pie.
Let's see. Lucille in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lucille.
Hi. I'm enjoying this show. Really, really brings back old memories. In the 1950s, my mother-in-law lived in Santa Monica, and we lived in Cleveland. And she would take the train, sit up for two nights to come to visit us, and she'd open up her suitcase, and in the suitcase were two jars of schmaltz. She would bring it in. She knew I didn't think I would not have it in the house, but she'd bring it, and then she would bake for us all her special Romanian pastries filled with potatoes and onions and schmaltz, and like a knish. And I just thought I'd share that with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Lucille.
Mm-hmm.
These are great. These are all great stories. And we live in a very special time, food wise, because because our food supply has begun making us sick. We've become sort of obsessive about food, and so it's bringing back all this great food tradition. And it's never been a better time to be a cook than it is today. And that kind of story is proof of it, that she would bring her schmaltz in the suitcase so that she could make her pastries her own way with that own unique special flavor.
Yeah, I love that story. Irene in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Irene.
Hi. Yeah, my mother used to put her schmaltz and the Gribenis into the mashed potatoes as well as into the matzo brei. That gave it that extra little yum.
Fabulous idea. Absolutely fabulous idea. It gives it that extra yum. I agree.
And when she was making it, when she was rendering the chicken fat into the schmaltz, then she would be draining it to get the last little bits from the onion and the Gribenis. She always had to fight with my brother and myself because as we passed through the kitchen, of course, we'd have to pick it out of the strainer and eat it before it finished. And she was like, leave some of it for later. So that's a fun memory.
They are that good that you have to, you fight over them.
Yes.
And the cook wants to save them to use specially. I mean, just chopped egg with Gribenis
exactly.
is a great traditional canapé.
Yes.
Gribenis in the mash.
Irene, do you make schmaltz?
I've made it once or twice, but I live by myself. I don't do a lot of from scratch cooking as my mother did. So like I remember she would even save up the chicken fat as she pulled it from the chicken and freeze it And then, you know, after she had done that for a few chickens, then she would make the gribbiness. So I've made it once or twice, but I'm now inspired. I have to try it again.
Okay.
You do. It's good for your soul. It will be good for your soul to have the smell of schmaltz throughout your home.
Thank you, Irene, for that call. Once again, 614-292-8513. If you have a memory, you want to talk about schmaltz, that's what we're talking about this hour. So join the conversation. Karthik in Worthington, welcome to the show. You're from India.
That's right. So I'm actually of Indian origin.
Okay.
And believe it or not, a couple years ago, I went back to India and I was visiting family. And we went to one of these specialty grocery stores and we found schmaltz. And I was totally flabbergasted by it at first. I was like, well, I have no idea what to do with this. We ended up taking it back home and I fell in love with it. I was wondering to your guest, do you know if schmaltz is available in any other regions of the world other than Germany still? I'll take my answer there.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sure it is available in every climate that needs to hold schmaltz, that needs to make use of schmaltz, of rendered animal fat. That band around the entire. What I'd be curious about is if it's the same on the lower part, in the southern hemisphere. Certainly in the northern hemisphere, there's schmaltz everywhere. And again, I love that somebody of Indian descent. India, of course, has their great fat, the ghee, the brown butter cooking fat, which is another fabulous fat to use. I love that someone of Indian descent so embraced a different kind of fat. So that's a another thing. Go ahead.
What I love about Karthik's call is that he saw something he had never heard of before, didn't know what it was, and bought it and used it.
Well, that's the sign of a real cook.
Yeah.
That's great. That's what you need to do. If you care about food and cooking, try new stuff. Try stuff that you haven't done before and pay attention and figure out ways to use it. I really admire what that guy did.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Hi, Michael. I enjoyed your visit to the Seasoned Farmhouse, and I love the Schmaltz Cookbook, even though it's a little esoteric. But my question is, what are you up to now? What are some of your next projects?
Well, first, I'd like to know how on earth is chicken liver and mothball soup esoteric?
Well, true.
My next projects are on technique. I think the world has too many recipes. We don't need all these recipes. What we need is technique. So I'm working with Little Brown to create a series of short cookbooks that have about 20 to 25 recipes, isolating and identifying the finesse points of basic technique. I just finished a book about called How to Roast. It's all about roasting, different forms of roasting. The next will be braise. So I'm working on a series of technique books, and I'm very excited about this. Exactly, ratio, which explores the notion that our food, you know, pasta and bread and all the stuff that we rely on, it's not about a recipe. It's about basic proportions of ingredients. And if you know those basic proportions, like that bread is 5 parts flour and 3 parts water, you really don't need recipes. You can cook anything. If you have one technique, you have 1,000 recipes at your disposal. So I'm all about technique and not about recipes.
Thank you, Steve, for that call. Take care. Thank you. Steve was referring to the Seasoned Farmhouse, which is a new venue, cooking venue, opened up recently by Tricia Wheeler, the editor and publisher of Edible Columbus. And Michael was there for an event.
Yeah, it's what a lovely place that is, and what a lovely woman she is. I urge you to support it and check it out. It's a great space.
Yeah, the Seasoned Farmhouse. It's right on High Street. It's easy to find. So in Clintonville. Email from a listener. They write, I come from a family of mixed ethnic background. One of my grandmothers kept a coffee can of schmaltz on the top of the stove for any old use, mixed with whatever fat she rendered from any imaginable animal. It stayed on the stove all the time, never refrigerated. Must have been like sourdough, layered in and never emptied as far as I know, until I carried it to the garbage can after she died. How we all didn't die of something from it, I can't tell you.
well, you didn't die of something from it because it's hard for, it's not an environment where bacteria are going to grow. They'd need more water. I mean, you can get botulism poisoning in that kind of environment. But the fat was so hot when it came off the stove, it was likely, it was basically pasteurized, so there's never a danger of that. And then it was recooked again, so any bacteria that would have been harmful would have been killed that way. So I really applaud that method of absolute economy, utilizing all things. Mm-hmm. I myself keep fat out on the counter to use throughout the week. And I think it's a great thing to do. I would refrigerate it more for flavor reasons than anything else. But don't throw away perfectly good fat. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's from roasted chicken, pour off the roasted, if you're not making gravy with the fat, pour it off and save it and cook potatoes in it. It's delicious. Use all your food. It's important that we use all the parts of the food that we can. It should be a moral condition of being a cook is to use everything.
Lou in Lancaster, you're on the air with Michael Ruhlman. Welcome, Lou.
Yeah, thank you very much. I grew up in Hungarian village, and just quickly, both sides of my family were Hungarian. We had I don't want to call it a delicacy, but it was a kind of a treat called Zsíros Kenyér, and it's basically bacon grease on homemade bread, and it was tasty.
Anything bacon is tasty, but I have to urge you not to use the word grease, but rather to use the word fat. Grease is bad. Grease is what floats through your kitchen and makes things gunky. Grease is what they have to trap in restaurants. They have something called a grease trap because it's wild and you have to trap it. Fat, on the other hand, is something wonderful. I'm good. So always use fat in terms of something good and grease in terms of something bad. So bacon fat on bread, how can you beat that? I'll tell you how you can beat that. Schmaltz on bread.
It was wonderful.
Schmaltz on rye.
Schmaltz on rye. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot,
Thank
Lou,
you.
For that call. Michael Ruhl, you refer to the differing schools of schmaltz thought, and I wondered, what are the differing schools of schmaltz thought?
Schmaltz thought is the question. I would say that the importance of onion. There are people who will want to put garlic in there. In some places, like Hungary, where they're famous for paprika, they can flavor it and color it with paprika. So there are different variations on schmaltz. But I stick to the lowest version, which is the most traditional, I think, which is simply chicken fat and skin rendered with onion.
Do you find yourself incorporating schmaltz into a lot of other dishes that you never used to before, that you would have used another fat and schmaltz has taken over?
I do. I have. And it's made everything taste better, whether it's, frying an egg in it or gosh, now I'm going to make popcorn. After that, one person mentioned it, I'm going to make popcorn with schmaltz. But yeah, it's so flavorful. Vegetable oil has no flavor. So if you want no flavor, then use vegetable oil. But if you want extra flavor for something savory, it's great. Fry a burger in it. What can't you? There's nothing you can't make better with something else than with schmaltz. So yeah, I always have a little ramekin or something of some rendered fat, and I use it for any time I need to fry or saute.
How did you get into the cookbook? I don't like to say business, but how did you become a cookbook author, Michael?
Completely by accident.
Yeah.
I went to the Culinary Institute of America to write a book about it. I was a journalist. And I thought I'd get in and get out with a story and move on to other books. And I did. But I learned how to cook. And once you learn how to cook, it kind of changes you on the inside. I loved writing about it. And I loved cooking. And I was also broke. And so I went out to a woman in Bainbridge, Ohio, to look for a job as a cook, because I knew she was really well connected in the chef world. And she said, "Oh, wow, I didn't know you did all this, Michael. I'm working with Thomas Keller on his cookbook, and we're looking for a writer." And suddenly I was a broke, unknown writer in Cleveland, and I walked out with basically a ticket to Yountville, California, to work with Thomas Keller at the French Laundry, at the time the best chef and best restaurant probably on the planet. So I think I was directed by forces greater than I to write about food.
Well, lucky us. Michael Ruhlman, thank you for joining us today.
A pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Michael Ruhlman, James Beard Award-winning author. His newest book, The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. Thanks to everybody for listening and for all your wonderful comments. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of Ohio State University.
Support comes from Edible Columbus, a magazine devoted to culinary traditions, seasonal cooking, and the local food movement in our community. More information on the winter edition, coming December 5th, can be found at ediblecolumbus.com.